If you're like me, when it comes to the book of Proverbs, you sort of have a love-hate relationship with this book. I love the punch of its many individual proverbs. I like what is communicated in some of the more lengthy sections. But if you're like me, you find the book to be rather frustrating to read. And especially those middle chapters where, you know, you go from one verse to the next, and it's sometimes just like a total different change in direction. And that frustration has been underscored in my mind the last couple of years as I've read through the book, and I have found myself wishing that I had more time, that I could go back and I could really kind of focus on some of those truths that are often contained in just a single statement or a single verse. And yet, during the course of a year, with my particular reading schedules that I choose, oftentimes the schedule just didn't allow to go back and to look at it in any significant depth. And it was then that the light came on, and I decided that the next time we had an opportunity, that we would do the book of Proverbs as one of our annual readings. And as was mentioned in the recent family meeting, that's what we're going to be doing for the year 2020. And I'm hoping that by doing it this way, that it will allow not only for a much slower pace, but that we'll be able to take a more deliberate approach to the book itself. If I was to ask you to describe the contents of Proverbs, I think most, if not all of us, would respond with the word wisdom, and we would certainly be right. But the kind of wisdom that is contained here in the book of Proverbs is, from a worldly standpoint, usually confined to the back corner of a bookstore in the religious or the philosophy section, the brand of wisdom that is, or we'll put air quotes around that, the brand of wisdom that is popular in our day is that which would help us improve our health or increase our wealth or stimulate our status or our level of success. But the kind of wisdom that is found in the book of Proverbs is that which not only observes how life best works, but it also asks and answers some important questions in terms of how and why life is to be lived that way. That in the book of Proverbs, what we find is a book of extraordinary wisdom, but it is a wisdom that works in ordinary life. And so we're not doing any Proverbs reading this week. We'll start next Sunday. We'll start reading through the book of Proverbs as a group, and I'll have a study sheet for you and all of that. But this morning what I wanted to do is just sort of introduce the book as we get started, as we prepare to get started for that reading in 2020. And just want to ask and answer five questions in regards to Proverbs. The first one I think that we need to begin with is, what is a proverb? Most folks are able to recognize a proverb when they hear one. Very few can provide an adequate definition when they are asked to do so. And even paremiologists, yes, that is a real word, students of proverbs, even the experts, debate a specific definition of what is a proverb. And so one man describes it as a short sentence in wisdom. Another, proverbs are short sentences drawn from long experience. I kind of like that one. One of my favorites was, a proverb has three qualities: shortness, sense, and salt. I like that one too. Kenneth Burke, who studies proverbs, defined it as shorthand for situations in life that recur often enough that people feel the need to have a name for them. Our English word proverb comes from a couple of Latin words, one meaning pro meaning for, verba meaning words. And so in English, a proverb is defined as a truth that is contained in a short, concentrated, striking way. Proverbs, one of the things about proverbs is that they don't argue points, they simply assume points. They don't explain truths, but instead they simply express a truth that is already well known. That the proverbs not only name, but they size up situations
that provide those who hear them and use them with guidance on how they should respond to the truth that's contained within it. And we find Proverbs actually scattered throughout the Bible. For example, in 1 Kings chapter 20, in verse 11, the king of Aram comes to, his intention is to level the northern kingdom's capital, that being the city of Samaria in the northern kingdom of Israel. And he's come to level it, and the king of Israel responds with a proverb. One who puts on his armor should not boast like one who takes it off. David used a popular proverb in 1 Samuel 24 and verse 13 when he was trying to convince Saul of his good intentions toward the king when he said, "From evildoers come evil deeds." And there David went on to say, "So my hand will not touch you." Even Jesus himself communicated in parables. In Luke chapter 17, for example, when he was communicating to his disciples that the arrival of the kingdom would not be missed. He said, "Where the body is, there also the vultures will be gathered." And then when he was preaching to those in his hometown in Nazareth in Luke chapter 4 and verse 23, he quotes a parable that he says, you wanted to quote to me, "Physician, heal yourself." The Hebrew word is the word masal, and in the Old Testament, it is used to speak of more than just what we would define as a proverb. Our English word is rather confined. It tends to focus on just a short, pithy statement of truth or fact, but the Hebrew word is more expansive, and so the Hebrew word is used to describe parables, for example, oracles, taunts, and as we'll see in the book of Proverbs itself, even rather long discourses. While it is admittedly difficult to define a proverb, at the very least, a masal is a saying that stimulates a thought and supplies insight to the one who hears that thought, and does so by thinking in terms of comparisons based on our memory or our life experience. One writer said of a masal that the masal provides a model of reality, or better, a model for reality, using analogy to connect the saying with the actual life situation of the audience. And so as we read through the book of Proverbs, we must remember that this is not just an ancient deposit of simple wisdom, but that it contains sayings and information that is designed to compel a response in those who hear them in a way that relates to their life. Here in chapter 1 and verse 1, where are the Proverbs from? Well, in chapter 1 and verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. And so from the very opening verse, this wisdom that's contained within the book of Proverbs is linked to Israel's third king, the son of the great king David. And so from a very early point in time, many of us are familiar with the fact that Solomon's wisdom came to him as a remarkable gift from God. Well, tell you what, let's just turn back there. Hold your place here in the book of Proverbs. Look back at 1 Kings chapter 4. 1 Kings chapter 4, and let's begin our reading in verse 29. 1 Kings chapter 4 and verse 29 provides us with some background to the book of Proverbs. So in chapter 4, 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29, beginning, the writer says, "Now God gave Solomon wisdom and very great discernment and breadth of mind like the sand that is on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all of the sons of the east and all of the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite, Heman, Talcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahol, and his fame was known in all the surrounding nations. He also spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. He spoke of trees, from the cedar that is in Lebanon, even to the hyssop that grows on the wall. He spoke also of animals and birds and creeping things and fish. Men came from all peoples to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from all the kings of the earth who heard his wisdom." Solomon is praised. He is accredited for 3,000 proverbs, 1,005 songs. He explores the world of nature, the writer says as well. And over in 1 Kings chapter 11 and verse 41, when we get to the epitaph of Solomon after his death, I want you to notice here that wisdom is marked out as one of his most notable aspects of his reign. 1 Kings chapter 11 and verse 41, "Now the rest of the acts of Solomon, whatever he did, and his wisdom, Are they not written in the book of the Acts of Solomon? Go back now, if you would, to the book of Proverbs. Because this reference here in chapter 1 and verse 1, at the head of the book, helps to establish for us the book's historical context. And yet, understand that Solomon is not the sole contributor to this book of wisdom. That there are sections within this book that are attributed to other people. In fact, there are 7 superscriptions that help to organize the book for us. 3 of them specifically name Solomon as the source of these proverbs, here in chapter 1 and verse 1. Also in chapter 10 and verse 1. And then in chapter 25 and verse 1, Solomon is referenced, but he is also referenced in conjunction with King Hezekiah, a king that came a few hundred years after Solomon. And it is at the instruction of King Hezekiah that he orders men to take some of Solomon's proverbs and to transcribe them. So there's a section in the book that falls into that category as well. There are 2 groupings of proverbs that are written by what is described as the wise. We see that in chapter 22 and verse 17, and in chapter 24 and verse 23. And then there are 2 other superscriptions in the book. One at the beginning of chapter 30 and verse 1, that chapter is the sayings of Agur. And then in chapter 31, beginning in verse 1, that these are the sayings of Lemuel, 2 men that we know little, if anything, about. In a variety of life situations, there is a demand for wisdom. That we not just know the right thing to do, but we know the best way to go about doing it. And because of the Holy Spirit and those who were used by the Holy Spirit, we have this remarkable resource of wisdom that is available to us. Question number 3, what is the book of Proverbs? And again, if you've ever read through the book, especially if you've tried to do it in 2 or 3 sittings, if you've just sort of casually skimmed through it, you'll notice that the book actually contains several different literary forms. And again, we often think of a proverb as a brief, pithy saying, and the book certainly contains a great number of those. But if you'll notice, the first 9 chapters actually contain several rather lengthy sections that resemble something more of a brief sermon, or perhaps even better describing it, a brief lecture. And then at the end of the book, there will be a confession, there will be a series of numerical sayings, there will be a final lecture, and it will end. The worthy woman in chapter 31 is actually an acrostic poem of praise, that each verse begins with a different Hebrew letter. In reality, the book of Proverbs is a collection of collections. It is an anthology of wisdom that comes from different sources, different times in Israel's history, but they have all been brought together in a single resource. And as I mentioned, the superscriptions help to sort of outline the book for us. Very quickly, chapters 1 through 9, we find what is described as the Proverbs of Solomon. Then beginning in chapter 10 and going through chapter 22, these are more of the Proverbs of Solomon. Those that happen within this rather lengthy section are almost all just single verse Proverbs, what we would often think of as a proverb. Chapters 10 through 15 are more antithetical Proverbs, and those in chapter 16 through 22 more synonymous Proverbs. In chapter 22 and the first part of chapter 24 through the first part of chapter 24, these are the sayings of the wise. And then in chapter 24, 23 through 34, more sayings of the wise. Then in chapter 25, there are more Proverbs of Solomon, but these are sort of collected by Hezekiah. He orders men to transcribe them. Chapter 30, the sayings of Agur. And chapter 31, the sayings of Lemuel. So that is what the book of Proverbs is. But look also here in chapter 1, and I want you to notice verses 1 through 7, because what are these proverbs for? And the writer answers it here at the beginning of the book. The proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. to understand a proverb, a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. There is a lot in those seven verses, and we could take two or three lessons just on those alone. But I want you to notice this cluster of terms that have overlapping meanings. Each one of them has some element of education in mind. Again, not simply conveying information to us, but guiding principles that help us find our way, the right way. Wisdom is the overarching term, and it describes practical judgment, knowing right living in the highest sense of it. Instruction, some versions translated with the word discipline, it carries the idea of correction. And so as we read through the book of Proverbs, there may be mistakes that we've made that are pointed out to us, perhaps even painful ones. The word understanding carries a sense of discernment. It provides us with the ability to recognize right and wrong, to practically, in practical terms, accept God's truth as a rule of life. Knowledge or discretion is the power to make plans, the ways to best achieve our spiritual objectives. The word learning has the idea of grasping something that a teacher is conveying to us. And the word counsel, an interesting word, it is a nautical term that was used for rope. And the idea that it came to describe is that it provides steering to us, that these proverbs will guide us in the right way. And you'll notice what he says in these first seven verses, that in order to achieve these things, these illustrations are going to be taken from a lot of different areas of life. And so as we read, we're going to step into everyday life in the home. As we read, we will at times be introduced to the world of friendships. We'll step into the world of the marketplace, the world of business. We'll be introduced to truths that are reflected in the physical world around us, animals and plants. In verse 6, you'll notice that this education is going to involve a variety of literary devices by which we are going to be confronted with this truth about the world around us and truth about ourselves. And the writers are often going to say, isn't life like this? And we'll shake our heads in acknowledgement. We'll say, yes, life is exactly like that. And then the writer will go on, well, if life is like that, then how should you be living that kind of life? Where every culture has proverbs of its own, that is, sayings that are designed to foster wisdom, this collection that we see here in the Old Testament will explore many of the same questions of life, but it is going to do so from the direction of faith in Israel's God and our obedience to His law. We see that reflected in verse 7, and we'll come back to that toward the conclusion of our lesson. And thus, this book is concerned with the practicalities of living in God's world, but using life skills that are taken out of the religious and the worship life of Israel. And so it weaves together, if you will, very colored threads of from the moral, the religious world of Israel, but it will weave them together with ordinary and mundane things that happen in life. And so in this particular book, that there's not going to be any division between something that is secular and something that is sacred. Instead, the writers of Proverbs are going to say that there are aspects of living for God in God's world that all just sort of belong together, that they are weaved together. Proverbs also contains truth that all of life is to be lived fully before God. And it provides us with information as to how we can accomplish that. Wisdom is certainly concerned with what a person understands, but it's also concerned with what a person does. And so it will unite not just belief, but action, as it looks to develop within us discernment and character. Derek Kidner, in his commentary, said that you have to be godly to be wise. And this is not because godliness pays, but because the only wisdom by which you can handle everyday things is conformity with their nature by which they are divinely made and ordered. But to instill wisdom, the student, that would be us as the readers, we have to see and we have to accept and we have to believe that walking wisely is indeed the best pathway of life. And so this book is going to try and persuade us that its view of life is not just a good view, but it's actually the best view. And therefore, the lessons that it is looking to teach us are worth learning. And it employs several different tactics to accomplish that. And so we'll come across proverbs that are of identity or equivalent. So, if, for example, in chapter 16, we'll only read one of each of these. Let's see here. We'll start in Proverbs 16 and verse 18. Here Solomon says, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before stumbling. There is equivalence that's drawn in that particular proverb. And then there is non-identity. There is contrast or paradox. For example, let's go to chapter 27. In chapter 27 and verse 7, in Proverbs 27 and verse 7, a sated man loathes honey, but to a famished man, any bitter thing is sweet. There's a truth to that, isn't there? A third, there are similarities or there are analogies. Here in chapter 25, a page back in my Bible, chapter 25, beginning in verse 12, like an earring of gold or an ornament of fine gold is a wise reprover to a listening ear. Like the cold of snow in the time of harvest is a faithful messenger to those who send him, for he refreshes the soul of his master. There are those proverbs that will be contrary to the right order of things. And so, for example, in chapter 17, and verse 16, why is there a price in the hand of a fool to buy wisdom when he has no sense? There are proverbs that are going to emphasize the fact there are some things that are futile, some things that are just absurd. There will be proverbs that are classifications of persons or actions or situations. And so frequently we're going to find information given to us about the fool or the mocker or about the sluggard, for example. In fact, at the end of the book, one of the most familiar sections in chapter 31, the excellent wife in chapter 31 and verse 10 going down through the end of the chapter. And then there are various numerical collections as well. For example, in chapter 6 and beginning in verse 16, and chapter 6 and beginning in verse 16, there are six things which the Lord hates. Yes, seven which are an abomination to him. And wisdom tells us what those things are. There are also Psalms that reveal relative value, that this is worth more than that, or this is better than that. Chapter 17 and verse 12 falls into that category. Chapter 17 and verse 12, Solomon says, let a man meet a robbed bear of her cubs rather than a fool in his folly. And then there are proverbs that will reveal to us the consequence of human character and conduct, such as in chapter 15 and verse 13. A joyful heart makes a cheerful face, but when the heart is sad, the spirit is broken. And so by each one of these literary devices, we are brought face to face with a variety of human situations that are intended to teach us various lessons in life, lessons in prudence or diligence or hard work or justice, that will admonish us to avoid those who would hinder us from walking a life of wisdom. That would be the fool, the sluggard, the scoffer. We'll find warnings in this book, several of them, about sexual enticements, about avoiding invitations to violence or for easy gain. We'll discover the precious nature of friendship, but we'll also be reminded that even good friends can wound one another. We'll be confronted over and over again with the good and the evil of our words, the power that the tongue possesses. We'll learn about love and commitment in marriage and family, and through it all, we are reminded constantly that divine wisdom is the ordering pattern of the good life. While it offers to us some great advice, some important life lessons, we must understand that it's more than just about those things. That as we look to live the wise life as it is contained on these pages, we, as a result, make the rule of God even more visible in our lives. But understand that the book of Proverbs is not a book of principles that allow us to predict life. And it certainly does not allow us to control outcomes. It's not a collection of promises that we can sort of exchange like coupons. These Proverbs describe to us how life usually works. Not how it always works. Not how it must work. And thus the importance of keeping a proverb such as chapter 22 and verse 6, keeping it in its proper perspective. Proverbs 22 and verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. That's a general truth. That's not a promise of God. Whether it was Solomon, whether it was any other wise man in the book of Proverbs, these are not observations of life that communicate to us that God is duty-bound to fulfill the truth that's revealed here. Instead, what it's communicating to us is that this is the way that God's world usually works. And therefore, here's how you can work with that world as opposed to working against that world. What are the main points of focus? Final question. Two answers to this very quickly. The fear of the Lord is one. We see it in verse chapter 1 and verse 7. And when you saw it there, it's not an exhortation. It's not a command. It is not an example. It is not a riddle. It is simply a statement of fact. That the wise person knows who to fear, knows what to fear, and knows when to fear. Where the fool, on the other hand, fears nothing and pays an incredibly high price for it. The book also ends in chapter 31 and verse 30 with a reference to fearing God. And everything in between chapter 1 and chapter 31 reminds us over and over again that a person is to do right, not just because of the benefits it brings to others, not just because of the benefits that it may bring to themselves, but because that's the life that pleases the Lord. And so for the ancients especially, fear of the Lord involved a recognition of the fact that he was the ruler of the universe, and therefore what was their responsibility was to bow in submission to that ruler. And therefore all of wisdom, Solomon says, finds its beginning in the fear of the Lord. That is the foremost and the most essential element. David Hubbard in his writing says, although fear includes worship, it does not end there. It radiates out from our adoration and devotion to our everyday conduct that sees each moment as the Lord's time, each relationship as the Lord's opportunity, each duty as the Lord's command, and each blessing as the Lord's gift. It is a new way of looking at life and seeing what it is meant to be when viewed from God's perspective. And so to claim that we believe in God, and yet, at the same time, we refuse to acknowledge his authority over creation and over our individual lives, the writer of Proverbs says, is to make us a fool. And the book helps us to see the danger of that. More than just good tips for good living, more than just conveying some moral advice, it invites us to have an ever-deepening relationship with God in every facet of how we live, not just Sunday morning Christianity, but Monday through Saturday Christianity. The second main focus is on its impressing upon us the need for character and virtue, and that leads to greater faithfulness in the eyes of God. Again, it's a mistake to see the book of Proverbs as just being a collection of good advice. And yet, at the other hand, it's just as wrong to elevate the principles that are found here to some ideal level of life that has no bearing on everyday life at all. Instead, it is extraordinary wisdom to be used in ordinary life. And if nothing else, the book zeroes in on the choices that we often face, and it recommends this would be the best choice. Here's perhaps a better choice. This is the even best choice. And therefore, by making those kinds of choices, we can become who God designed for us to be. And so Proverbs will advise us to speak truth and not falsehood, chapter 14 and verse 25, to walk in humility and not pride, chapter 18 verse 12, to practice diligence rather than sloth, chapter 18 and verse 9, to demonstrate generosity instead of greed, chapter 18. It's not going to provide us with direction for every situation in life, but what it will do is present the kinds of qualities of character that we are to possess that will help then to guide us in making right decisions from that point forward in life. And so I hope that our time within this book in the next year, will provide us with a renewed sense of the importance of biblical wisdom. That it will move us from being just students at the beginning of the year to perhaps being teachers of wisdom when we get to the end of it. That we are able to pass on the wisdom that we've gleaned from the book to somebody else. That what the book of Proverbs reminds us of is the fact that God doesn't just teach us by way of law or by way of command, but that He also teaches us by way of observation of how things work in life, by life experience, and we will come to see that in an abundant way in these 31 chapters. Wisdom is a gift that is given to God, or given by God to those who desire it, to those who seek it, those who thirst for it. And God willingly and abundantly does that according to James chapter 1 and verse 5. And this is one of the tools that He's provided to supply that to us while His wisdom remains hidden from those who don't pursue it. And so we'll see right away from the very first chapter, we'll see wisdom personified as a woman who's out in the streets, who's calling, who's trying to get anyone she can to listen to what she has to say. And I hope that in the year ahead that we will be the ones who will listen, that will heed the voice of wisdom, and it will help us to live in a way that is more pleasing to our God by the time we get to this point in time in the new year. It would be wise, Scripture says, to acknowledge God. That's where wisdom begins, the fear of the Lord. This morning, if you're not a child of God, then you've not demonstrated that fear, that reverence for Him, that understanding of everything that He's done, as Jay talked about in his talk, what He's done to save us, to bring us into a relationship with Him. If we can help you to obey the gospel of Jesus this morning, we hope that you would make that need known. Won't you come? Together we stand. Together we sing.